Hi, I'm Ahmed Shahabuddin, and you're in the stream. The unsolved death of a young woman in northern Mexico has shocked people across the country and highlighted an emergency of gender-based violence. In 2020, we here at The Stream looked at the persistent crisis of femicide in Mexico. But 2 years later, murders of women and girls based on their gender are still rising. Today, we ask why. Here's a little bit more context from AJ Plus about the case of Devani Escobar. For more on all of this, we're joined from Mexico City by Edith Olivares Ferreto. She is executive director at Amnesty International Mexico. Also in Mexico City, Estefania Vela Barba. She is executive director at Intersecta, a feminist organization. And from Monterrey, we have Chantal Flores, a journalist and author of an upcoming book about enforced disappearances of women in Mexico. Of course, we want you to join today's conversation. As always, send your comments and questions through our YouTube chat just right here, and we'll bring them directly to our guests. Ladies, thank you for being with us. I want to start, Chantal, directly with you, because I understand you've reported on this for more than, you know, the better part of a decade on femicide, and you're in Monterrey, where, you know, she was found, unfortunately. I want to ask you, what do we have to understand about this incident in the context of everything else that's happened? Why is this problem getting worse?
Well, I will say the main thing is that authorities are not investigating, right? They keep seeing the disappearances of women and femicides as isolated events and also as individual acts of bad behavior, right? They refuse to acknowledge. And when I say they, I'm talking about all the way from the municipal level to the federal level, right? So it's the government in every step. Mm-hmm. And they keep refusing to acknowledge the systemic inequalities that women face across the country, but also the general context of disappearances that exist in the country, right? So I think the problem mm-hmm. starts from there. As we saw with Devani's case, she was the one to blame for her own disappearance, right? And we keep seeing this narrative that we are the ones to blame for our own deaths and disappearances.
So the government blaming the victims, obviously an old narrative that was used once again. I do want to ask you, Estefania, you know, why do you think, or is it true that this particular case in Monterrey sort of reactivated a lot of people to actually speak out and get into the streets? Is there something specific about her case?
I think this particular case has to do, again, with a very old story. Mm-hmm. It's going to be almost 30 years, for example, since feminists particularly and families started denouncing the increase of the murders of women in the city of Juarez in Chihuahua. So at least for 30 years, we've been having in one way or another this type of conversation. I think in this case, I don't know about my co-panelists, but seeing her in the street alone, and I think it mm-hmm. connects many of us to that feeling of vulnerability and insecurity, and how in spite of 30 years of this ongoing conversation, mm-hmm. Statistics show that we are nowhere near solving the problems, but actually that the problem continues. In many cases, it has become even more complex.
And, you know, we're seeing some images there of you know, people reacting. It's a very visceral and emotional moment, but a moment that you said really spans three decades. Let's listen to what some protesters had to say after they discovered Devani's body there in Monterrey. Take a listen. All right, it seems we're trying to get there.
On this occasion concerning Dubani and all of the women that have been found in Nuevo León State, I want to say that we are not fools. We do not need to be lawyers or have a degree to realize that there is no justice, not even posthumously.
To be honest, it happens very often, regardless of Dubani. We have had several femicides in 1 month. That is what we fight for. That is why we come here every time these things happen. And also on dates like March 8th, International Women's Day. We come here to be heard and to make these things stop.
Edith, I see you're nodding. When you hear what some of those protesters had to say, what comes to mind about where we are in this moment and how to move forward?
Thank you. I think the biggest problem in Mexico is impunity, and that's why people and especially women take the streets to protest. And this is the other way, the other point in this conversation that we have to have, because we are in this kind of spring, feminist spring in Mexico, yeah. But it's a movement who are increasing because the violence against women are increasing and the impunity is unresolved during these 30 years, as Estefania said.
And Estefania, you know, you're hearing, you know, her kind of outline how long it's going, echoing some of what you said. And we know the state is failing to actually address this. Otherwise, you know, there wouldn't be a protest movement. We wouldn't be seeing or even maybe having this conversation. With that in mind, Estefania, where does the role of data come in? I mean, is the government even aware of just the scale of the problem?
I think two things are important to say. Data is key, because if you don't have data, it's very hard to understand the problem. And if you don't understand the problem, it's very hard to come up with an adequate solution. In this regard, I think it's important to highlight two things. In the first place, we don't even know really how many femicides there are. Mm-hmm. We do not have an adequate estimate of how many of the killings of women are related to gender-based violence, even according to one of the many legal definitions we have. I think this speaks to the government's lack of interest in better understanding the problem. So that's one. Mm-hmm. How many cases like Dubani there are, we can't even say for certain. We know how many women are killed, but not how many cases, you know, the nitty-gritty of the situation. On the other hand, and I'm sure we can talk about this more, how many women, let's remember that this case began, it was denounced that she had disappeared. A few days went by without her body being found. And the magnitude of the problem of disappearances in Mexico is also unknown. We have databases that instead of getting better, mm-hmm. in many ways have gotten worse. So I think that is one key element of the lack of interest in the problem.
Yeah, and you talk about the lack of interest. We also know that, you know, many people criticize the government not just for being deflective, but really being negligent. And we have one comment from Janice Gallagher that kind of, you know, outlines what's actually going on with the government and how they're choosing to not address this. Take a listen.
So to understand why the case of Devani Escobar has received so much attention, we need to remember that this is in the context of years of protests in response to both femicides and disappearances in Mexico and endless promises by the government that things are going to change. Instead, what do we see? First, we see a government who their first instinct in this investigation was to blame the victim. Second, we see egregious investigatory and forensic errors. And third, we see a government who still isn't taking responsibility both for the investigation of what happened to Devani Escobar, as well as taking all steps possible to make sure this never happens to anyone else again.
I'm curious, Chantal, why is there so much impunity for gender-based violence in Mexico? I mean, why and what is being done about it? Or are you optimistic that the government will address it?
No, I'm not optimistic at all. And I think that was the general feeling or the collective feeling on April 22 during the protest here in Monterrey. I've been covering the feminist protest for a while. And this one, we gotta remember that Monterrey, Nuevo León, is very conservative. We don't see the protests, the feminist protests that we usually see in Mexico City. Mm-hmm. So on April 22nd, when hundreds of women took to the streets to protest this, the general feeling was not only anger, as we usually see, for instance, on March 8th. But it was this, it was devastating. It was sad. It was, there was hopelessness that we couldn't, we don't know what to do anymore. You know, I come here as a journalist, but I'm also a woman living in Monterrey. And it's just so frustrating that we don't see an exit to this. And the other thing is that the government refuses to acknowledge that the disappearances of women and girls are perpetrated by both state actors, criminal organizations, and this is sending a permission to men in general across society that they can also disappear our bodies and nothing will happen to them. And I think that's the scariest thing, right? That there's this permission to do anything to women, right, and there are not going to be consequences.
And perhaps that's where the complicity comes in on the government's sort of inaction. Estefania, I saw that you were nodding as we heard from Chantal there. I'm curious, how well resourced are police, are prosecutors, you know, in order to actually tackle these cases, not just the murders and femicide, but also disappearances?
I think there's two things I want to highlight. No, it's on the one hand, how authorities react to individual cases. And I think that, as it has been said, this case is exemplary of what we see across the board. We have underfunded institutions. And this is the best case, because many times we highlight, for example, public servants that are machistas. What is tragic about our country is that even when you have public servants that are truly committed to the cause, resources aren't always what is necessary to properly investigate the cases. So this is one thing, and I'm sure Edith can delve into it more. The other thing I want to highlight, though, and we can talk about this further, is beyond the individual cases and how they are processed by prosecutors, by courts, what is the overall strategy of security? And one thing that I think is important to highlight, both for the killings of women and for the disappearances of women, is that both have increased in the context of the so-called war on drugs, which in the case of Mexico included the increase of the strategy of militarizing public security. So it's not just that the prosecuting or justice institutions are failing, but the tools that we use to supposedly fight organized crime in this case not only have not solved the problem.
Yeah, sorry, I don't want to cut you off. You're saying it hasn't solved the problem. I'm going to let Edith finish your sentence because she was nodding. I know you want to get in there. Edith, what about what Estefania was saying is kind of on the mark here?
Yes, I think it's important to remember that it is a problem of indolence of the state. This is an indolent state about violence against women. And we have already, I don't know, 30 years more or less with these deficiencies in the investigation of women killers since Ciudad Juarez. And right now, we can say all Mexico is turning into Ciudad Juarez because the number of killers, the number of disappearances of women and girls, the deficiencies in the investigation of the murders and the disappearances of women are the same as 30 years ago. So it's worse, I think, because since the sentence of Campo Algodonero, we have all this framework or institutions and legal advances, but they don't be applied by the authorities.
And
so it's worse.
And also,
go ahead, Chantal.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
I think also we need to be careful that we keep talking about women as an homogeneous group, right? And we got to remember that the women who were being killed in Ciudad Juarez, they were workers, right? And we don't have the information to really understand the dynamics of violence in each state in Mexico and to understand what is a more vulnerable group of women who are at risk of being disappeared and killed. We don't have that information because we keep saying don't kill us, but we are not the same even as women. We are not considering the intersecting factors. And that's important in the conversation.
I appreciate you bringing that up, obviously, as well, you know, sociopolitical factors, geographic factors, and that's why the data is so important, as you've been making the case. For our audience who may not know, I don't know what the exact statistic is, but we've been pointing to the fact that a lot of crimes in general in Mexico they go unsolved, even unaddressed. I've seen numbers upwards of 90, maybe 98% of crimes. With that in mind, I want to share what this translates to in the streets, in the homes, for people who are directly affected by this. There's a level of anger that is very palpable that I want to try to convey to our audience through this clip, which includes the mother of a missing woman. Take a listen.
Authorities don't do what they have to do in a timely fashion. For them, when someone goes missing, they are just absent or lost. They continue arguing that we need to wait 72 hours to start searching. Instead of going forward in the attorney's office for missing people, we seem to be going backwards. I have had friends who have gone missing, who have been raped, and nothing has been done about it. Specific cases have drawn attention from the authorities, but this is a reality that has exceeded because this is something that has been going on for many years.
Stefania, you've heard these women. I see that you're nodding with a lot of the points that they're making. I don't want to spend too much time talking about the president, but this New York Times article sums it up quite well. Mexico's president says most domestic violence calls are fake. He's also deflected and downplayed this by saying, you know, this really happens everywhere. It's not specific to, you know, the problem isn't specifically problematic here in Mexico. Estefania, that anger and the president's and the government's on all stages lack to address this. I mean, do you see any hope that in 30 years we won't be having the same conversation? Another 30 years?
That's why we're here, I think. I think the three of us have that hope that by creating enough awareness, by betting all our efforts and not just everybody that's currently an adult, but on the kids and the children and everybody, there's a possible change. I think the difference between right now and 30 years ago is that we at least have some lessons as to what hasn't worked, which I think it's an important lesson. Like I mentioned, one of the things that time goes by and more evidence is accumulated is if you want to fight these levels of violence, which are extraordinary, mm-hmm. And continue under this government, militarization is not the adequate strategy. If you want to work with prosecutors and police, they need to be well-funded, they need to be properly trained, they need to have adequate institutional frameworks.
Yeah.
This is also important because, just to mention, in this case, for example, Nuevo León has a special prosecutor for femicide.
Mm-hmm.
So in 30 years, we have created specialized institutions for gender equality. And what we're seeing is that if you still don't have a deeper institutional reform, these institutions are going to be outliers.
And obviously, please. Sorry, I don't mean to cut you off. Finish your point.
No.
I was just going to say.
My only hope is.
Yeah.
Let's learn from 30 years.
Right. That can be applied in so many conversations here at the stream. You know, so many lessons perhaps go unlearned for too long, and that's why we're talking about them still. But Chantal, with that in mind, you know, we've heard about the need to address this on the governmental level, institutionally. What about the culture? Of course, it's all very linked. You know, a lot of people online and in our comments saying patriarchy plays a big role in all of this, preventing the investigations. What can you share with us about that? Is that accurate?
Yes, definitely. I mean, Monterrey is in the north, super machista society, conservative. The main objective in this society is economic progress, right?
Mm-hmm.
So usually human rights violations or any social issues are being covered by the government, right? And the media too, because we also eventually need to play about the role of the media, mainstream media,
mm-hmm.
in this.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I really wanted to highlight that a cultural change that we have seen, we have a strong feminist movement or
mm-hmm.
movements, but we also have a very strong movement of families and mothers of the disappeared who are leading the search. And I think we usually separate, you know, femicides with this movement of families.
Chantal, you've worked personally with a lot of those families, I know, because my producer told me. And so I'm glad you brought it up because I was curious. There's one anecdote about how families are coming to you to sort of I don't know how to put it really, but this desire to sort of go viral. I mean, it's not just the case that we heard about recently. Could you share with our audience just that sort of phenomenon? It's quite tragic.
Yes, that has been, I think, heartbreaking in the past weeks, because they see all the attention that Nuevo León, and not only the Bani's case, but other disappearances in the state has gained. And they text me, you know, like, how can I make it to the New York Times? How can I, you know, bring all this attention to the case of my missing daughter? And many of those cases, they know that their daughter has been missing even for over 10 years.
Right.
So I think it's really frustrating that we have created a system when social media and the public decide which lives deserve the attention.
Right, right. And
I think that's heartbreaking.
And Edith, I want to come to you, but before I do, I want to share with you three and our audience a video comment that came in from Jennifer Piscopo, kind of outlining why she thinks the impunity needs to end and how we may go about doing that. Take a listen.
Mexico state and federal governments must end impunity for abusers. Perpetrators are rarely held accountable for hurting and killing women, which sends the message that the abuse is not important and can continue. The problem is that prosecutors, governors, and even the president himself spout misogynistic myths that hold women responsible for the crimes against them, suggesting, for instance, that women are loose or immoral and therefore deserve the violence. This is not true. Accountability must start at the top, and it's voters who must hold politicians accountable. They must vote out the governors, the parties, and the president who spout such misogynistic ideas. They must send the message that the next political leaders are responsible for investigating crimes properly and for bringing perpetrators to justice.
So, Edith, I'm curious if you agree. Yes. She says accountability must start at the top. She echoes a lot of what's already been discussed on this show. Moving forward, where does accountability start, and how can we reform the system?
Yes, I'm interested to highlight the point that this kind of disorder in our state is institutional violence. And this state of Mexico, the state of Mexico, not only the Estado de Mexico, but the Mexican state, is guilty of institutional violence against the victims of the women disappearances and victims of feminicide, because this is a state who made a lot of violence with the victims, with the families of the victims.
Right.
They delayed the process, they attacked the families, and they don't have, the families don't have,
and
maybe never, food, justice, and damage and reparation.
And I'm curious, to bring justice, Chantal, where would you put your flashlight, the first thing that needs to really be focused on for those who want to see justice in these cases?
I think right now something that the families of the missing are missing is the support from the rest of society. As they have seen in the past days, that a family got that support in some way, right? So I think the main thing is to continue with this is more of society, because the society, is divided, but the real divide is the pain they are carrying and the pain we are not willing to see in our fellow citizens, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's the first thing, because this problem is collective and we got to start, you know, joining the families in this fight. And then from there, I think we can do a lot to keep the government accountable. We got to stop focusing on this reform and this, because there's no political will, resources, or anything.
Right, right. And, you know, we have a lot of comments in our YouTube section. I want to read one out before we go. This is from Lee saying, maybe classes to educate Mexican boys while still in school that girls and women are not objects or disposable. So obviously pointing to the cultural education that needs to happen. Ladies, thank you for you know, sharing your voices with us. That's all the time we have for today. But this is a conversation we're going to continue to cover here at The Stream. Thanks for watching. See you next time.